sports around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsports.
Here we are for another week, all hands on deck, and, well, perhaps that's not such a good thing, but we'll muddle through anyway. Well, I will.
Yeah, we know who usually muddles, don't we, Peter?
That's right. Craig has all of the buttons in his hand, so we can just sit back here and laugh.
Yep. And if anybody hears anything, you know, sort of, you know, embarrassing pause or something, we all just can picture us here going across the panel at Craig. So there we go. Anyhow, we've done our bagging of Craig. We're going to talk about another Craig later, aren't we? Craig Lowndes, of course. The story continues, doesn't it?
Yes, the ongoing saga. Where will he go now?
Yeah, and we'll wait and see where he ends up next. But, yeah, lots of things going on, of course. Last week, Bathurst, a race of changing weather and changing fortunes for various drivers. And, Peter, of course, you're up there doing the coverage for us this time around. I was up there on the Friday. You're up there for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you, of course, brought the goodies back with you from Bathurst.
Yes, that's right. The station is called Triple SFM, the good sports. But do I have to be a good sport about this? The Fords didn't win, and I can't say I'm particularly happy about that. But it was an exciting race nonetheless. At least the Fords put in a decent showing for once.
Yeah. Now, one of the people you had a chance to talk to after the race is the guy, because hidden in all the celebrations and victory by Garth Sander and Jason Barguana was the fact that Mark Scaife did secure the championship with the whole Matthew team.
Mark Scaife drove the car from first to sixth.
How did he do this?
Yes, of course, it was a lot of drama for the HRT that they were at least publicly saying that their whole emphasis was on the championship. Maybe they were hedging their bets there a little bit. But yes, everything was about the championship. And Mark Scaife caught up to the media after the race, and where the media asked him about how his race went, and in particular, did it turn into driving just for the championship?
I mean, that's exactly right. We were way down, and there were some pretty ordinary conditions out there, very easy to crash today. So I had to just make sure that I was conservative, and it's the hardest way to race.
Yeah.
You know, you hear noises, you bloody drive so slowly. And I was sort of probably doing 9/10 on the last bit because I just wanted to make sure I didn't make a mistake.
Yeah. But what's this for media, Scott? I know Andy probably asked you that. But...
Well, I mean, it hasn't really sunk in yet, Steve. I mean, last year was disappointing, and it's fantastic to win it this year. And I went into this year understanding that we had to go well the long distance races, and we've been lucky enough to do that. But, I mean, anyone that wins these championships now, I mean, they are bloody hard to win because there are excellent teams and great drivers out there. I mean, you know, you look today, how many guys were in with a chance to win this race today?
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing that happens all year.
Yeah, and we're still on in the last race.
Absolutely, yeah.
What were you thinking when Garth was in that position?
Well, what happened, actually, is I got a stuck throttle when Garth passed me.
Oh, really?
I'm kidding how dangerous that was. I come up to turn one. Went up the lap after the accident with Matt Neal and Crompton, the lap after I come up to turn one, and it snuck on about, 20% throttle. And as it turned in, it just understeered straight, and it looked like it was just going to go straight in the sand pit. And I dipped the clutch and had as much brake on it as I could, and I missed the apex by miles, and obviously Garth got me. Well, we were very close to having to come in then, so I kept on blipping the throttle and doing everything I could think of, and for a lap and a half, I had to dip the clutch at all the slow corners because it was just going to run straight to the fence. And then it cleared itself, so I don't know what was wrong with it, but, you know, you don't need jammed throttles on wet tracks.
What about the traffic? We talked about that.
The traffic is fantastic. Honestly, I thought the traffic really did a very good job today. I mean, there was a couple of little things, but, I mean, they can't pick the cars up. They can't hang them off skyhooks. You know, they can't pick them up and move them away. So, you know, the guys, I really think they did a fantastic job. I mean, I didn't have what I would call an ugly moment all day.
How would you rate this championship compared to the other championships?
Too early to tell, I think, Steve. I mean, I think this is my best. I think this is my best because I think it's harder to win. Not that it's harder to win the races, because in 1994 and 1995, the category is very healthy also. But it's harder to win because the whole series counts now. And it's more team oriented, and there's more days when you've got to get there. And it's fantastic. No, I was really keen and motivated to get into it this year, and I'm lacking a bit of motivation this afternoon now. But by the time February comes around again, I'll be back on it again. There'll be one or two quiet hours, I would say, Andrew. I'd say that that CEB sponsorship's going to come in very handy.
And of course, the questions soon turned towards that incident between Matt Neal, Mark Scaife, and Neil Crompton.
I didn't know whether it was Paul or Matt Neal, but
It was just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what he was doing. I don't know whether he actually saw where I was or was just being a lunatic by himself. And when he fired up the inside of the Crompo, I mean, really, Neil had made a clean pass on him and I thought it was done. And I basically sort of just followed Crompo up there and all of a sudden he's come from the clouds and thought he could outbreak the world. So all but out. Very, very, very close. Well, what happened then, Will, is that I was obviously dragging on the guard very hard and I said to the guys, look, you know, I think it's going to be okay. And then a lap and a half later, the throttle jammed and Garth was right behind me. We're having a bit of a battle. And the throttle jammed at turn one and then it kept on jamming for the rest of about a lap and a half. And for whatever reason, it cleared. It was okay. So we kept on sort of charging around and we were then going to be pretty conservative because we didn't need to fire in the fence. And then the tyre burst down Conrod and, I can give you the tip, it's not actually the nicest deal. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to turn around or go straight or whatever, and I was a bit lucky and kept on going straight, made it in and put some tyres on. Absolutely, I mean, it was just one of those horror days. I mean, everything was going so well for us. The car was fantastic, especially in drying, wet conditions and in the dry. The car was just sensational. And, I mean, you know, every time that we had a restart when we were with Garth, you know, in terms of speed, the car was great. But, I mean, you got a bit of luck with you. I mean, we say that about this, and you got a bit of luck with you, and certainly that little drama with those guys, you know, didn't work out that way.
Right, a throttle sticking around this place most of this
month. You know, it certainly made the eyes wide open a little bit, Crusher. I mean, you know, into the cutting and into Forest Elbow when the cars have got throttle on them and they don't want to turn, and you just got to dip the clutch and it's bent from a reveling all the way down there. I mean, that's the only thing you can do about it instead of firing the fence, so I was a bit lucky.
So, yeah, there we have Mark Scape telling us about his championship and also the race. And it's quite interesting there that his perspective of the Neil Crompton-Matt Neal incident. And I know that Colin Ford here will offer a different opinion. But, of course, Matt Neal, three laps or so down, what was he doing playing with the big guys like that?
Well, as Matt said, no blue flags telling him who was overtaking him. The other thing you've got to remember is that some of the cars, which look similar, which he was dicing with on the same lap in terms of second cars from the team, such as the car which Muller and Plato were in, you can't sometimes tell who's behind you. And the other thing you've got to remember too is the fact that the British Touring Car Championship, watch them, they do overtaking moves like that over there where they do actually get past and do it nicely.
I think that if he was on the same lap, then there's very little blame that you could put on Matt Neal. Really it was Neil Crompton who misread that Scaife would come down the inside, and it was really Crompton trying to squeeze Scaife that really set off the chain reaction there. But the fact was, he was three laps down. The officials at the meeting gave them a one-minute stop-go penalty, so the officials definitely thought Matt Neal was to blame in that. One of the great things about Bathurst, of course, is sitting back and doing the post-mortem and talking about what-ifs. Of course, Scaife and the Seaton Crompton car would have been in very fine position then to challenge for the race. But, yeah, we can talk about if all day, can't we?
Yeah, that's right. But one man who did get across the line, or he watched his teammate get across the line, we spoke to Garth Tander last weekend, and Bargs at his press conference, you could tell Bargs was excited. Bargs is still excited.
Yeah, I mean, standing in pit lane, I was more nervous than actually driving the car. The tension in the garage was amazing. I was there, everyone was so excited, from sponsors to family and friends to the team. I mean there's, you know, probably a couple of people here that can share that and they understand that, and it's a very exciting feeling. And to actually see car 34 get the checkered flag is a dream come true.
Yeah, obviously Jason Bargwine are very, very happy there to sort of get his name up the top of things. He's actually been a winner at Bathurst 4 in the baby classes, as they say, in the past, but his first time with an outright win and a team that's actually worked very, very hard over the last few years to sort of develop itself and make itself one of the front-running teams.
That's right. He's come an awful long way from just a couple of years ago. He was in the Holden Young Lions car and he stuck it into the wall pretty hard just during one of the warm-up sessions on the Sunday morning. So really heartbreaking and almost career-destroying move. And just a few short years later, he's standing up there spraying the champagne.
Mm. Now, one of the things we did see at Bathurst this year was on the start line, the Harker for Team Kiwi, which is one of the new teams that's joined in with the championship. Of course, they didn't have the greatest weekend. They, of course, on a very steep learning curve. They're going to be back next year with two cars in the Shell Championship Series. And, of course, the big change next year with the Shell Championship Series is that the final round next year won't be Bathurst. It'll actually be a grand finale event at Sandown, so that it'll actually allow Bathurst to keep some of its uniqueness in terms of the distance event. But then they're going back to the sprint format, Sandown, a few weeks later.
But isn't the sprint format changing?
Yeah, they're doing all sorts of things. Some races will have a sprint format,
i.e. qualifying three races,
yep,
yada yada yada.
And it depends a lot on the pit lane arrangements and so on for those circuits.
Mm-hmm.
While the other races will be the mini enduro thing, very similar to what we saw for GMC 400 here in Canberra, of a couple of short races then a longer race.
But
so
they're going to include a top 10 shootout, I thought, at every round.
That's right.
Much like the World Superbike Super Pole.
Mm. And same as they did for GMC 400 here in Canberra, they have the top 10 shootout as well for that. So,
or in the case of Bathurst last weekend, the top 10 shoot off.
Yeah. All shooting off into the Caltex Chase.
Yeah. Now, isn't there a new sponsor there now?
It's still Caltex Chase.
Oh,
you
okay.
Ask anyone, it's still Caltex.
Yeah, well, that's right. You ask anyone, Ford won 20 years ago.
Ouch.
Okay, but anyhow, the Kiwis were there, and the interesting part is that they'll be back again next year with a two-car team. And I think probably given a little bit of time, they'll probably develop quite nicely. And if we look at the number of New Zealanders who are already running a championship in terms of Greg Murphy, Paul Radisich, there are a number who are there and doing quite well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go. But of course, this weekend we also go to the other side of the Tasman, over New Zealand, where the Formula Holden guys are running the Denny Holm Memorial Trophy. Denny Holm, of course, remembered for running in the Australian Touring Car Championship some years ago, actually died at Bathurst, died behind the wheel of a BMW M3 car, which was running with part of the team with Tony Longhurst and Alan Jones a few years back. And each year now they run, as part of the Tasman Trophy, the Denny Holm Memorial Trophy over in New Zealand. And of course, the Formula Holden guys are running that over there this weekend.
Well, the first round of the Tasman Cup has been run and won over there at Mansfield in New Zealand, and Brenton Ramsey and Kerry Cooper from Motor Race New Zealand join us on the line. And first of all, Kerry, you get to enjoy all the drivers who have been spending a lot of time in Australia back mostly on their home soil.
Yeah, that's right. It was a good turnout of New Zealand guys. Beautiful day over here. We turned on the weather for the Australians as well, and yeah, it was a pretty good race.
For everyone over on this side of the ditch that's wondering, why is New Zealand running Formula Holden? Obviously, it is a division that that Motorsport New Zealand is promoting. What was the attraction to work in with the Formula Holden Association?
Well, I think the main attraction is that New Zealand, of course, is only 3 million-odd people, so to try and have our own premier single-seater formula is a little bit of a pointless exercise. So, as you've seen from Simon Wills and Scott Dixon and so on, we consider Formula Holden to be the stepping stone onto international motorsport, and for that reason, we promote here the junior categories in Formula Ford, and then look to the Holden Australian Drivers' Championship for our guys to move on.
Well, Brenton Ramsey, of course, every year we seem to have a plethora of New Zealanders come over for the championship, and it's been quite a while. In fact, Jason Bright, I think, was the last Australian to actually win the championship.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we seem to have more Kiwis than Aussies at times, it seems like, but it's definitely a good grounding for them, and they have no problem in making the jump across the Tasman to do the championship with us, and then, as we've seen with the likes of Dixon, move on to Indy Lights and then to who knows where.
Well, with the racing, obviously the Tasman Cup Series is a prestigious series here in Southeast Asia, and today the highlight trophy race of round one, of course, is the Denny Holm Memorial, which it itself has a great history, Kerry.
Yeah, it does. Some of the world's greatest Formula One drivers, in fact, Sir Jack Brabham, Chris Amon, you name them, they've won the Tasman Cup as far back as 56, I think it was first started. And today you'd have to say that after race one, Simon Wills would have just been an absolute shoo-in to take the trophy.
But some resourcefulness and some luck has favoured, a couple of the Aussie drivers towards the end to get them up in the placings. And NRC Racing, Brenton Ramsey, has continued on with some good success in the Formula Holden Series to take a very, very exciting victory.
Yes, well, that's right. It was a bit of a surprise, actually. Partway through the race, a 30-lap race, the Denny Hull Memorial Trophy, it looked like Simon Wills had it all sewn up. He'd had it all going his own way. But there was a safety car incident when Paul Dumbrell actually had a bit of a lose, and the safety car came out, and then Simon actually had some troubles with his belt, and he had to make a dive for the pits, and that put Andy Booth into the lead, and Leroy Stevenson in close pursuit, and it was the NRC driving combination of Andy and his newly backed Procia Reynard that went to the line and took the trophy. So a great win for Andy in his first Formula Holden win, and what a race to do it.
I was about to say, Kerry, you probably know more about Andy Booth than, well, the other two Aussies on the line.
Yeah, Andy's he's run here before in Formula Ford, back probably four seasons ago, and didn't run that strongly, but ran here with Yudai Igarashi, who ran Formula Nippon this year and ran in the New Zealand Grand Prix Series last year with Hocking Motorsport. And then Andy set it offshore and competed mostly in the Palmer Audi single-seaters in England. So last season he came back with Yudai with Hocking Motorsport, and then this year a pretty determined campaign, obviously, with NRC Racing.
Now, NRC Racing's Dale Breed has actually moved up into V8 Lights contention there, Brenton.
Yeah, that's right. He's had he's run in Formula Holden, and now he's looking for the, I think it's the now in the Konica Lights series or the Konica V8 series in Australia during 2001, and NRC will be campaigning a car there in addition to their Formula Holden lineup. So those guys are going to be pretty busy and maybe having some late nights, but he'll be moving on to that. But just one other thing I want to mention, when you look at the Australian drivers, is the outstanding performance of Rick Kelly, who's come over and taken the seat in Peter Hill's Reynard 95D, and this is his first race ever in Formula Holden, and Rick Kelly's gone out and got two third positions, two times on the podium, in some pretty demanding conditions here. It's a total of 50 laps when you look at the two races combined, and I know he was feeling it after speaking to him after race one. But he's hung it all together in the big one, and he's come up on the podium, and that's a fantastic effort. And I mean, there's a bit of a talk at the moment to see if he can't try and stay in the car for the main Grand Prix race next weekend.
Yes, of course, there is two weekends in a row, and for the Australian teams, which have mostly New Zealand drivers, unlike the New Zealand teams, which have mostly Australian drivers, go figure. How much does it actually cost, and how much time is spent by the teams to get the cars over to New Zealand?
Well, I think you look at the deal that we've worked out with Kerry, and it's an attractive deal, I think, for Formula Holden to come over here and race, and we love to come over here and fly the flag for the category, and obviously the Kiwis love to race on their home turf. And I think when you look at it, it's a good package for Formula Holden and for Motor Race New Zealand, because we get these fast cars over here, and for two very exciting rounds, and this year in the North Island, which is another draw card for the series. So yeah, it's a pretty good option, and I think for drivers also from overseas, I think it's a good opportunity for them to come across in what is their off season. And we've got Emerson Newton-John over here from America at the moment, running here as well with Murphy Motorsport. So I think we're going to see lots of things happening in 2001, both with the Australian Drivers' Championship and with the Tasman Cup for next year. So it's all looking pretty good, and it's definitely a great, a great feather in the cap for Formula Holden, and we love coming over here and running with Motor Race New Zealand, that's for sure.
Mm. Now, Kerry, why is it that in New Zealand open wheel racing is still considered the pinnacle, whereas across the ditch it's touring car racing which everyone aspires to?
Yeah, I guess in your own, and the V8 supercars in their own right are very strong in Australia, but just take a look through history and see who actually means anything in the books, and normally they've got a pretty strong portfolio of single-seater racing behind them. And our young Kiwis, and I'm sure some young Australians, and Jason Bright has taken up the mantle for them, would really love to get into top-line international single-seater racing, and that's really what our young fellas aspire to.
It does all bode well for New Zealand motorsport to have people like Scott Dixon, Simon Wills, all campaigning so well overseas. But with the Australian dollar in the doldrums, the New Zealand dollar probably not far behind it, how expensive does that make it for a young driver in New Zealand to compete?
Oh, it's pretty punishing, really. I mean, you say our dollar's not far behind it, man, we're leaps and bounds behind it. We're basically, the New Zealand dollar buys about 38 cents US, so the transition to head up there is enormous. And really, the impetus to do that can't come out of corporate New Zealand. It has to come from offshore. But we've got a couple of pretty clever, wise old heads here that have put Scott Dixon up there, and hopefully they can create a path for some other young New Zealanders.
Well, of course, the series does not end today. The New Zealand Grand Prix, which, of course, is another of the Southeast Asian highlights in open-wheel racing. I guess you've got Macau, the Australian Grand Prix, and the New Zealand Grand Prix as the three big races that anyone who lives down here wants to win.
Yeah, that's right. The New Zealand Grand Prix has a massive history. In fact, still in New Zealand, the single biggest ever one-day sporting crowd was to the New Zealand Grand Prix, even above rugby and so on. So that was a few years ago, but, I mean, there's been all sorts of... you name them, the New Zealand Grand Prix trophy list is the who's who of international motorsport since the mid to late 50s. Jackie Stewart, KK Rosberg, Jack Brabham, the list goes on and on. And in recent years, Craig Beard, Paul Radisich, Greg Murphy, Simon Wills. It's got a great history and it'll have a great presence in Pukekohe next weekend.
And of course, these cars are getting seen on some fantastic circuits for them to be seen on, very fast and flowing events and circuits they are running.
Of the circuits, and Brenton ran last year pretty well down south, and you might have an opinion on how the circuits pan out for this year. You've had a look at Pukekohe, Brenton. What do you think the form will be for next weekend?
I think we're in for some big action at Pukekohe, that's for sure, because the track is very, very fast there. And as also we've seen here at Mansfield, I mean, we've got an average lap speed of about 176, 177 kilometres an hour. So the tracks are pretty fast. I mean, that's the sort of things that these guys like. They like a good fast track. And even just looking out the window here where I am in the media centre at the track at the moment, you see this section of track in the middle that's this change of direction, a left-right-left combination that's... also really test the drivers in terms of their endurance and their stamina. So I think it's a good test for the guys. And just while we're on that, in race one today, Craig, for your Canberra listeners, we had Terry Clearahan running in his Rolt RT23, who had a fantastic dive with Stuart Costiera. And Terry ended up finishing sixth in the first race, in the preliminary race, and that was a fantastic effort. So some of the Canberra listeners may well be very interested in that result.
Yeah, because that car would have been something that Brabham could have driven in his heyday. It's not a real young one.
No, that's right, but it was definitely on the money today, and it wasn't down on horsepower, that was for sure. Stewie Costiera was having a good battle with him, and Terry held him out for the whole race. I saw him after the first race, and he was just about buggered after the first race. So it really was a bit of a test in terms of endurance. Unfortunately, he had to retire in the second race with a bit of a problem, but there's been plenty of action today, and I mean, we can't wait to move up to Auckland now for the feature race and see how it all pans out. But with Booth the surprise winner today, it just shows that anything can happen. And this whole gaggle of drivers that are behind Simon, I'm talking about guys like Matthew Halliday, Rick Kelly, Paul Dumbrell, Leroy Stevenson, they're all lapping within about one or two tenths of each other. So it is really shaping up to be a good race up in Auckland.
And for people who would like more information on Formula Holden, the new website, which we haven't talked about, is formulaholden.com.au.
That's right. You can get to the new website at either www.formulaholden.com or .com.au. So both options will pull you through to the new website. And we work pretty hard to make sure we've got all the results and photos and point scores and all that sort of stuff there. So if you ever want to come up to speed on what's going on in Formula Holden, it's definitely the place to check it all out.
And now, Kerry Cooper, Motor Race New Zealand is not behind in technology, and your website, absolutely fantastic. You can probably find everything you will want to know or get linked to everything that's going on in New Zealand from there.
Yeah, that's right. For your Australian listeners, probably the quickest way to link across to that is out of the FormulaHolden.com site, and just click on the links there and jump across to Motor Race New Zealand. It's got schedules, TV coverage, dates, everything's there.
Now, this event was going on to NZTV1?
Yes, that's correct. Yep, Shell Helix Motorsport and TV1 News.
All right. Now, will that be coming across the ditch to Channel 10, Brenton?
Well, it's difficult to say at this stage. We don't have anything in writing, but obviously we'll be working to try and show highlights of this package across in Australia. But failing that, of course, we'll probably still be able to whip some video coverage onto the website somehow to give the fans in Australia sort of a peek of what the action was here in New Zealand.
Well, it sounds like you fellas are having a great time. Enjoy the week in the East Island there, Brenton. I'm sure they'll look after you. And Kerry Cooper, we look forward to talking to you again after the New Zealand Grand Prix, or in fact previewing it on the Sunday morning sports program next Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much to Kerry Cooper and Brenton Ramsey joining us there from Mansfield in New Zealand, where it was a debut winner in the Formula Holden feature race, the Denny Hall Memorial, where Andy Booth has picked up victory.
And this weekend, of course, is the grand final for the World Rally Championship, the Rally of Great Britain, and we've got this report from Jonathan Ledyard in the BBC. Oh, not ready yet. We were talking earlier about Craig not having the buttons all working
it
right.
It takes 5 seconds to get things organised here. You talk for two and expect me to be ready. Life is like that. Jonathan Ledyard from the BBC with his report.
Richard Burns isn't in the habit of wishing ill of his rivals, but you can understand if he waits at the end of each of today's final three stages thinking uncharitable thoughts about Marcus Gronholm.
No, it's not all over. There was a chance yesterday morning that it would be all over, but today, I've just driven as fast as the conditions have let me, and we've had some good time.
Colin McRae's demise yesterday, when he was well set in the lead, proves nothing can be taken for granted in the wilds of South Wales.
Well, it does, because it puts us back in the position that we needed to be in. I mean, before I could go along, you know, if I was in second place or third place, it didn't make any difference. But now we're in the lead, then move the pressure back to Marcus, really.
Does it make any difference to you being first on the road? Does that matter in this event?
Not really, no. I actually prefer to be first car, because then you don't have the distraction of any other marks, and I think it's actually better being first car, because the more cars that go through, the more mud sort of comes up from the surface, so I'm happier being first car.
We said all along it's for Marcus to lose, but is there now pressure on him? It's the final day. Surely it's going to be going through his head. I could be world champion by the end of the day.
Of course, he's only got four more stages before he can be world champion, but you know, he's been under a lot of pressure for a long time, and he's kept his head, and he's been driving very, very well. And even here on this rally, when he didn't need to do particularly good times, he's been strong. So you have to say he's done a fantastic job.
And who will forget also the extraordinary turnaround 2 years ago, when Carlos Sainz was denied the title in the final yards at the final stage. Becoming only the third driver to achieve a hat-trick of British victories would be some consolation to Burns, but the ultimate prize is almost certain to be claimed by the 32-year-old Finn, Marcus Gronholm, who hadn't won a world rally until February. Now, anything better than sixth will guarantee him the sport's top honour.
It was a good thing when Colin was leading, but now he's out of the race, and Burns had the place what he need now to win.
And, of course, that means that Marcus Gronholm will be the first, I think, Peugeot runner in quite some time.
Yeah, 1986.
86, yep. Take out the World Rally Championship. And I think, this is their first year back in Group A?
First year back at the top level.
WRC, sorry.
WRC, yeah. So, yeah. Now, they've been running in other classes in the past. And the thing is, really, you've got to consider that this final round of the World Rally Championship, it's really been under threat for some time. They've had the incredible flooding and storms in the UK, and all the forestry areas and some where they run the race has just been completely and utterly saturated. They've had threats of truck blockades in terms of fuel prices over in the UK, and there was a real chance the race was going to be called off at some stage, but as it is, they've been able to get everything sorted out, and in particular the RAC, MSA officials, who are the guys who are running that rally, they've been working flat out to make sure that the forest stages that are being used for the rally weren't getting chopped up in reconnaissance, and
therefore everybody's going in with an equal chance of winning, and hopefully probably later tonight Australian time, by the time people hear this in some other places of the world, it'll be decided, and it'll either be Marcus Gronholm or Richard Burns. I'd say very likely that unless something drastic goes wrong, it'll be Gronholm.
Yeah, Gronholm, all he needs is 1 point to assure himself of the World Championship. So.
Yeah, he basically has to stop completely and utterly and not finish, and Burns has to win. If that happens, well then... But then again, we've seen that, as they say, with Carlos Sainz and his Corolla a few years
ago.
And
his helmet episode.
No, it was Louis Moyes' navigator putting the helmet through the rear window.
What gets me is Tommy Mäkinen has an illegal turbocharger on the car, gets a slap over the wrist. Toyota have an illegal turbocharger on the car, get kicked out of the sport for 2 years.
Toyota's problems were a little deeper than just, oops, it's the slightly wrong model. They had a rather ingenious way of getting around the turbo restrictors. A very complex and very premeditated cheating in that case.
Yeah, and it's different too, as well, if you've got a subcontractor who decides to improve the casting of a particular part. In this case, it's the water cooling jacket around the turbocharger, and that's something that you're allowed to blank off. So there's no performance gain. The actual internal dimensions and shape of the turbocharger area is the same. It's just the water cooling jacket is something they took out of it. So, one of those crazy things. And apparently they've been running those same turbochargers since June this year, but there's going to be no retrospective action.
It was before June that he had his last win.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at the British Touring Car Championship, because a lot of announcements coming out this week.
Well, that's right. Yeah, Peugeot, they've said they're coming back next year, and they'll be running the Peugeot 406 Coupe, and they're looking at a number of different options there. The fact that in the future there are other cars they may look to run, but at this stage they're going to run a number of the new Peugeot 406 Coupes, which are quite a sexy looking car. The prototype Astra Coupe Racer, which is going to be Vauxhall's competitor in the British Touring Car Championship, it was shown at the British Motor Show the other week. They actually had one of the cars there, and apparently, you know, quite an interesting car. Naturally enough, it was sort of done up, ready to, you know, get everybody interested and spurred on. There's talk about a lot of other manufacturers coming in. There's talk of Alfa Romeo with a 156 and maybe the new 147 hatchback. Talk of another couple of people possibly running the Lexus IS200. Rover, of course, is tipped for a mid-season return to the British Touring Car Championship with a MG-badged Rover 45. And then, of course, for the format, they're saying that next year they're going to run three races, two sprint races, one for the BTCC production class cars, another for the BTCC touring class cars, and then the third race, which is a feature event, will require the BTCC cars to make a compulsory pit stop, and production cars can run the distance without a stop, so that sort of takes account for the difference in speeds, and you know, they all get together for the final race. That's going to be very, very interesting for British Touring Car Championship next year, and of course more and more manufacturers talking about getting into that championship. It looks like they've probably come up with a good option and a good way of running.
Of course, the DTM is going to be an interesting one next year, with a lot of those cars being introduced and testing being done all over Germany. And with that expansion series, you've got two V8 series that are really road racing series that are really trying to push the boundaries. The V8 supercars, which are trying to get out into Asia, and you really have to ask the question, Peter Norton, is there enough interest and is there enough strength in the formula for it to withstand a lot of outside races? New Zealand next year, Dubai is the other tip for 2002, with South Africa or the Middle East in 2003. We see what happened to CART when they started stretching their leg.
Just go back to the DTM when they became the ITC, and again the same sort of thing. They started going to Japan and all these other places. Next thing you know, the expenses go up because of all the travelling involved, and the series imploded, and that's the real danger. And the DTM have made it very, very clear already they're not going to go down the ITC path.
Still going to run three races in England next year, so...
But that's for a particular reason, but they're not going to do the great big touring around all over the place. They're keeping it very limited, and the thing is that they might go to the UK next year. The following year they may go somewhere else like Helsinki, but they're not going to end up... They're only going to have a limited number of overseas races, and it's probably going to be about two each year.
Well, you don't have to really go overseas in Europe to get to another country either. You can just go to France, or you could go to Austria. Hell, they owned Austria for so long there.
Well, basically, they count Austria as part of the DTM anyhow, mm-hmm. so...
Well, really, for the commercial success of these things, you need two ingredients. One is the market relevance of the vehicles. And I think
the manufacturers,
Yeah, I think that's where the Australian V8 supercars really do have a challenge in their expansion plans. New Zealand is fine because they're driving Commodores and Falcons as well. But if you get further afield than that, you're racing cars that the locals don't know, they can't relate to. And that's where some of the Middle East expansion plans could be interesting, because Holden do sell a number of Commodores and large vehicles into that market. The second ingredient, of course, is the drivers. And if you're in the Middle East or elsewhere in the world, the Scapes and the Seatons and the Lowndes of this world, you know, who are they? There's nothing there to get the fans excited. And that's where CART are really struggling. And that's with having a lot of non-American drivers occupying the vast majority of the grid. And that the fans really can't get excited about that. It's not the names that they've grown up loving.
And joining us now is Motorsport News editor Phil Brannigan. Phil, you've got your bumper Bathurst issue out with a great picture there on the front cover of the winning car of Garth Sander and Jason Barguana from Gary Rogers Motorsport there. And of course, this is probably the first issue in a long time that we've seen that actually doesn't have any mention of Craig Lowndes on the front cover.
Yeah, you've got to go all the way to page, well, I don't know, what have we got, page 4 or 5 before we get Lowndes into the equation. It was kind of interesting and a little bit poignant that Craig got out of the car. It was in the lead and had completed his duties with HRT, just as Peter Brock had done before 3 years ago in 1997. Brock was in the lead, sharing a car with Mark Scaife, brought it in, the car disappeared, and that was it. So now everybody's wondering what the heck's going on. We kind of sort of think we've got a few things sussed out. We know what he's not doing, so, you know, I was the guy who said, bet your house on it, so we'll see what happens.
Mm. Of course, the main feature of this particular issue is all the coverage of Bathurst, and of course you've got the full works there, including all the Russell's famous words to the media, which cost him a $10,000 fine that then went away, and a few other things that have been happening in relation to the great race.
Well, yeah, a couple of points I might make about that. Number one, Russell blames the media for reporting the words that he says, and he says so in his column, and we don't censor Russell's column. We told him when we started doing this that if he wanted to make a point, he could make the point. Russell chooses to say those words at press conferences, and you know, sort of gets the good on you, Russell, and all the stuff that goes with it, and then he gets upset when the media reports what he says. I think Russell Ingall's going to have to grow up one day. He can't have it both ways. If he's going to live by the media, sometimes he's going to get hurt by the media.
Mm.
And it's about time he realised that he's a big boy and he's got to stand on his own 2 feet.
Now, one story, it was as bad as the Lowndes story, Russell Ingall's his penalty, because my old man up in Queensland has been giving me all these dodgy tips from the moment Craig Lowndes was up on renewing his contract. He rings me up today and goes, oh, you know what? Ingall's seat at Castrol is in jeopardy because of what he said. And I'm going, Dad, listen to the show. We played that press interview, and Larry says, looks like he's reading my notes. And Dad's going, but the customer cars, because everyone he bagged was a Larry Perkins customer car.
Well, that's a little bit of a coincidence, and I don't think that would even occur to Russell at the time. Here's another question for you. When was the last time somebody took a conviction to appeal and lost?
Yep, don't know.
I don't know either. I know that I was watching an NBL basketball game last night on TV, and one team had 37 foul shots and the other team had 10. And the coach, of course, is not allowed to say anything because it's all one-sided. This is getting a bit too one-sided. I know that the Cairns judicial system is supposed to consider every case on its merits, but not every case can be proven to be wrong. Why hasn't anyone gone to appeal and lost? I don't understand. I'm not saying they're wrong. I am asking the question, what's going on?
Mm. It could be that they don't want to be seen as the bad guys, but then why bother bringing anyone up on a charge if you're just going to overturn it on an appeal anyway?
It has been mentioned to me that CAMS is so afraid of litigation now that they will do anything to stay away from it. And several people have already indicated that they would be litigious if they had a threat of being rubbed out. Now, I'm not saying that's true, but if it was the case, it would make sense economically. So, I know there are some things in the judicial system up for review. I would suggest that might not be a bad place to start.
I love the media release from Movesco. The media release heading was 2000 support categories calendar. But there was no date.
Well, you started the sentence off by saying, I love the media release from Evesco. That would be a first for 2000. I must say, one area Evesco does need to work on is its media liaison. No surprises there, really. It's a very complicated matter, the support categories. Not telling everyone the dates, I guess, is a bit of an oversight, but then again, not totally unexpected. We've got all the dates listed in the magazine. It is a complex situation next year because classes are chopping and changing. The most notable addition will be ProCar running its own race meetings next year. Just what we need in this country, more race meetings.
Mm. Now, of course, the other major issues, other than Bathurst, in the last issue of Motorsport News, of course, is James Courtney, who's done very, very well in a Jaguar Formula 3 test over in the UK.
Well, I had a long-time observer of young racing drivers, especially in Formula 3, on the phone a couple of weeks ago, and he said Mark Webber will be in Formula 1 in 2002 and James Courtney will be in Formula 1 in 2003. And I'm starting to wonder whether he may have got that the other way around, the wrong way around. Courtney went so well in the test he did for Jaguar, which followed up the test he did for Allan Docking Racing, that there are already people saying that he is going to do 1 year in Formula 3 and then go F1, just like Jensen Button did. Now, I think that's a big ask and it's an awful lot of pressure to put on him. He did two seasons in Formula Ford, but the people over there who have seen him drive a Formula 3 car are saying that James is the real deal. And not only did he go well in his test, he did all the setup himself and he was up against Luciano Berti, who will be racing for Jag next year. So I think as an early career Formula 3 test goes, James couldn't have done much better, even if we did have a pretty ordinary picture of him in the magazine.
Your Jensen Button comment was interesting because Patrick Head coming out throughout the week and giving him the biggest rap he's ever given a driver.
Well, I can see sometime in the future that Frank Williams is going to put his head in his hands and say to himself, what have I done? Because I know that Williams and BMW and Schumacher Jr. and Montoya are going to be a pretty good combination, but I think that in the future Benetton, Renault and Button and maybe Webber, but certainly in the short term Fisichella. Renault in Formula 1, do you think they're not going to take this seriously? And I think Button is going to be their boy. So I think sometime as early as next year, Benetton's going to go out and thrash Williams and Frank's going to think to himself, I've done it again.
But, yeah, again's right, because Coulthard is case in point.
Well, yeah, Coulthard is a case in point. Williams got rid of him, went to McLaren. He's now, I think, going into his seventh season partnering Hakkinen. Frank's got a history of picking the wrong drivers. He admits Nigel Mansell was an emotional pick. He wanted a British driver in the team. He picked Alan Jones as a nice reliable number two to Carlos Reutemann or Clay Regazzoni at the time, and AJ turned out to be a world beater. He picked Keke Rosberg as a nice backup to Reutemann, and of course Reutemann retired after the first race of the 1982 season, and suddenly Rosberg was carrying the can for the team. So Frank Williams has never been a good judge of horse flesh. He's been a good judge of engineers, and he's been very good at organising his teams. Prove me wrong. Gordon Kirby says Montoya's the best driver he's ever seen, a man who reports on IndyCar racing, but let's wait and see. It's a nice prospect to have. And don't forget, if none of these guys work out, Junqueira is sitting there under contract.
Mm. Now, of course, one of the other things you covered was something we picked up a little bit on last week, was about the Texaco filing the lawsuit against Newman Haas after Andretti left the team. So, again, the case where some of the sponsors are also getting into some litigation about, well, we wanted a particular driver and he's gone somewhere else now, give us our money back.
That's right. I mean, I don't pretend to understand the business of motor racing, let alone the American business of motor racing, but it strikes me that an American-based company like Texaco would have basically someone dropped in their lap like Cristiano D'Amato, a good driver, but let's face it, who in America has ever heard of him? Another Brazilian. God save us, haven't they got any American drivers over there? What are they doing?
IRL.
IRL?
Great series. Oval tracks only. Race at the Indianapolis 500. You might have heard that little event.
Yeah, well, and I know that NASCAR is commercially sucking the life out of every other form of the sport, but I've been saying for some time, even a couple of times in print, too many foreigners in kart racing. It's an American championship. Hey, I'd love to see an Australian driver in there. But let's see some Americans. Why can't Bassa get a drive? Why can't Herta get a drive? The guys are proven race winners, and they're not the young up-and-comers, but put some Americans in there, for goodness sake. Compare the driving lists now with what they were 7 or 8 years ago, and it's changed around 180 degrees, and it's not fair.
One of the interesting things about next season's kart calendar, which has been released, and of course, is the number of races. First of all, there's 22, but then the number of those races that are now taking place outside the USA You know, races in Germany, races in the UK for the first time, Australia, Japan, Mexico,
Brazil.
You know, they're all over the place. And of course, again, it's the case of, well, what was an American series is actually being lost, and it's actually becoming more and more like an American-based version of, dare we shudder and say, F1.
I was actually talking to one of the kart media guys when they were present for the Surfers Paradise race, and he said, first up, his passport had lasted him something like 5 years before he got all the pages stamped. Now he has to go out and buy a new one because they're going to, like you said, they're going to six countries. They're going to England, they're going to Germany, they're going to Japan, Brazil, Australia, Mexico for the first time. They're going offshore a lot to facilitate 22 races. They're cutting down on testing, which I think is actually a good idea and something maybe Formula One should look at. But again, it's turning into a bit of a foreign legion. A kart in America is now rating twos and threes on cable television, while NASCAR's in the mid-teens.
And NASCAR has just signed a deal that will be on free-to-air television every race weekend.
I was at a phone shop yesterday. I saw a Jeff Gordon phone cover. You could put one on your Nokia phone.
Yeah, well,
Unidial. Kart driver.
Unidial have the Kyle Petty phone cards here in Australia.
Absolutely. Wherever he ends up, one of his close mates and advisors, Noel Watson, who's very, very clear when it comes to merchandising, I guarantee within 12 months you'll be able to go and buy Craig Lamb's phone card.
Mm. And of course, there's lots of other things that, no doubt, this is, I suppose, one of those key things that is about Craig's situation, is that the control over the merchandising and marketing that he'll have, hopefully, when he moves to his new team, means that we'll probably see a lot of things that that people would like to get in terms of Craig Lowndes memorabilia and other items.
Well, not only that, there will be a lot of Craig Lowndes merchandising, and imagine if he had gone to Kmart, or if he does go to Kmart, going down to Kmart 11 o'clock Friday night before you go to the race with your kid and buying a t-shirt and a hat and a jacket with Craig Lowndes written on it. It's a dream in heaven. But then you get to the track the next day. Are we going to see people 7 deep outside HRT's merchandising area buying Mark Scaife and TBN merchandise? I don't know. I think the situation at HRT will change.
Well, that's right. I think HRT, they're actually able to capitalise for a long time on, first of all, Peter Brock, then the kid, Craig Lowndes, came along. Scaife, he's sort of fitted in there, and he's actually, I don't know if he's as comfortable with a lot of that meeting and greeting with the people as Peter and Craig are.
Well, I think you're right, and somebody at Holden told me that last year, 1999, HRT turned over $10 million in merchandising. Now, a bad businessman like you or I could make $2.5 million clear out of that. I'd like to send a cheerio to Mr. Peter Costello as well while we're in Canberra, but I didn't do it. Craig Lowndes stands to turn over that sort of merchandising probably by himself, properly marketed in the next 2 years. I don't know whether HRT will continue to grow in the same way. And now, of course, the other situation is that another Holden team has broken cover. GRM's won Bathurst, and Bhagwana and Garth are very popular drivers. So I can see some changes happening on the merchandising front in V8 supercar racing.
Mm. That's right. I think it's the old story. You watch the fans follow the drivers that they're interested in, and you know, the range of merchandise that goes with it, you know, sort of the merchandise is there, and the queues get longer and longer behind certain drivers, and of course, more people make use of their.
But then you have to bring Sarah Jane in, and you've got an instant long line.
The Chico Roll Girl.
Yeah.
I'm a cynic, but it was interesting with a franchise 3 license that Gibson Motorsport holds, which about 10 issues ago you'd suggested might be an option for Holden and Mobil to set up a Craig Lowndes team. Would you be able to race, or would you have to go through the lights before you could qualify for Bathurst?
Well, there's a couple of things to look at in a Level 3 franchise, and one of them is you don't get the same amount of finance assistance as a Level 1 team does. It's been suggested to me that the difference is about $280,000 a year. Now, if Craig Lowndes is going to spend a couple of $1 million in merchandising, who cares about $280,000, basically? Number two, Level 3 team doesn't have any performance disadvantage over a Level 1 team, so it's not like he won't have access to the same sort of tyres, for instance, like Level 3 drivers used to have years ago. The Level 1 guys were the guys with the tyre contracts. Control tyres has fixed all that. The only downside is that at least at the first race of the season, Craig Lowndes will have to go and buy his tyres because he won't be in the top 12 in the previous race. And the third side of that is, who's going to bet against Craig Lowndes not pre-qualifying for a race? If you have 14 cars on the grid shooting for one grid spot and Craig Lowndes is in one of the cars, who's going to get the grid spot?
Yeah, he does have a couple of things stacked his way. And the other thing is, if Holden Mobile were to do it, well, then the 280 he's missing from official support isn't going to matter because they're going to own the team anyway.
Well, $280,000 is one V8 supercar or one Pantech to carry it in.
Mm.
In the giant scheme of things, it takes about $2.5 million to set up the hardware needed to go to a race with two cars. So you're talking about 10% of the outlay. And also, with the merchandising potential and with Holden or Ford likely to underwrite some of the startup costs, it's going to be a good deal for a potential sponsor. They might be able to go in year one with a cheap rate while everybody else is paying for the startup costs and for Craig's contract. So these are the things that are up in the air, and these are the things that we're trying to keep a track of. And we haven't even mentioned who might go to other teams depending on where Craig ends up. So there's an awful lot of balls in the air.
Mm. I think there's a few people who will be waiting to see where they all drop, as they say.
Yeah, I know that Neil Compton is one of them. And Jason Bright denied on Friday that he'd signed with HRT, though they must have had the conversation. If they didn't, Jason Bright and HRT would not be doing their job properly.
Mm. Oh, I want to start a new rumour. Craig Lowndes is going to team up with Neil Bates in an official Toyota team. Toyota Avalon team. How's that?
Sounds fantastic.
It's as bad as anyone else's.
Sure, I spoke to Neil last week about this, about that exact subject, and he sort of looked very glassy-eyed, as he does when he doesn't want to answer a question. I don't know. Toyota have said they are continuing to look at V8 supercar racing. I think Toyota going V8 supercar racing makes a lot more sense than Mitsubishi at the moment, because Mitsubishi are having some economical problems at the moment.
It'd be like Daewoo having a one-make series. Oh, they do.
I don't know anything about that, but anyway, I don't know. It would take Toyota at least 12 months to get a project up. The buying cost of a category would probably be in the order of $5 to $6 million. Do they want to go and spend $10 million in year one? That's how much it would cost them to get at least two cars on the track and get Craig Lowndes and get a factory and get a license from Vesco.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awful lot of money, and what's the upside?
They get themselves some more advertising market share, hopefully, if they get some wins. But, of course, if they start winning, the other two guys will then put some disadvantages on them.
That's true. But the advantage in getting Lowndes is it makes their learning curve technically a little bit shorter, because even if a car is only 95% as fast as a well-sorted AU or a VX or whatever it's going to be next year, Lowndes can make up for a multitude of sins of the car. Because Craig Lowndes, if you give him a bad car, he will just go and drive it fast anyway. Mark's Gafe will go and fix it.
Mm. Well, Phil Brangan, thanks very much for joining us this week with the latest on Motorsport News. No doubt the next issue in a fortnight's time, we'll have probably some more news and rumours and other information on what's been happening around the traps. And, of course, at that point in time, we're probably getting into the build-up ready for the American Le Mans race down in Adelaide.
I thought you were talking about the build-up ready for the Almanac. Yes, the new year will be a busy time.
Yeah. Well, Phil Brangan, thanks for joining us this week on Inside Motorsport.
Joining us on the line is the editor-at-large, although I'm assured that he will soon be the editor, full stop, of Kart Oz, and that is Mark Wicks. And Mark, it is great when you can combine a love with some paying work.
It certainly is, yeah. It's really good. I mean, I've been involved in karting ever since I was a kid, and sort of the last couple of years I've had an opportunity to work in the industry, and it's not like going to a real job.
No, not at all. Just coming back from Puerto Rico, where you've been enjoying the 2000 Rotomax Championships.
Yeah. There was a team of six Australian drivers attended, and there were all up, there were 66 drivers from around 19 different countries, I think it was, represented at the Rotax Max World Final. Various countries from around the world had their own series to determine which drivers from that country would go. And from Australia, we had six drivers, and William Yarwood from Queensland come home in third place.
A fantastic result there, and it's building on what has been some great Australians that have been doing good work overseas. Of course, James Courtney immediately comes to mind, a two-time world champion.
Mm-hmm.
But you have people like Caruso and Winterbottom, and of course Winterbottom only last weekend really put his name in front of the selectors, as it were, with a fantastic performance at the Formula Fords at Bathurst.
Yeah. No, he's been doing really well. I would imagine that he would be running Formula Ford next year if he can get a good deal, and possibly the same with Michael Caruso. Both of those drivers have run the Ford-backed Max series this year, and they're both looking to do something along those lines next year, and I suppose obviously following James Courtney's steps.
Now, with the 2 series running side by side this year, you had the Ford Max Challenge and the APS Challenge. It gave double opportunities for carters to get exposure.
Well, it did, yeah. The APS Racing Series is basically for the professional classes, if you want to call it that, the same classes that they race at World Championship level in Europe. And the series here has been immensely competitive, and that's where the likes of Caruso and Courtney and all of the guys who are looking at motor racing as a serious career, as the series they're going in. This year we've also had the Rotax Series, which has got an offer of Formula Ford drive domestically next year, so obviously that's been a good series for people to follow as well.
Of course, an interesting one was the move of the Oceania Championships to Rally in New South Wales. Previously it was run at, of course, Eastern Creek Cartway.
Yeah, it was at Eastern Creek the last time it ran, and Rally is very popular from a driver's point of view. The drivers love the track, and the visiting teams love the track as well because of the undulating nature of it and proximity to the beach for the partying, I think, is what the deal is there. But yeah, it was up at Oceania the other weekend. We've obviously got a report on the meeting as well as the Puerto Rico finals in the Carlos magazine. But yeah, Troy Hunt dominated the Formula A field at Rally at the Oceania this year, following on from his great performance overseas.
One thing I did notice, Troy Hunt and a number of the other young drivers are also taking the opportunity to drive in the Daewoo and the Mitsubishi series that have been supporting the Super Touring cars throughout the season.
Yeah, a few of them have done some one-off deals to run in these one-make series. Gives them some experience on a car track as well as with a heavier car, a heavier vehicle. The go-kart, obviously, while it's very fast, it's also very light and very nimble with making direction changes and so on. And some of them are going in having a bit of a play around at car racing, trying to meet some people that they can use in the future for a car racing career.
Now, of course, you've just got back from Puerto Rico. You're obviously getting all the stories together for Kart Oz magazine, which is out in 2 weeks' time, I believe. But
yep.
It doesn't stop with just the Oceanas and the Rotax Max Challenge, and of course, 3 weekends ago now, I think the New Zealand CIK Championships were run at Hamilton, round number 4. But this weekend in Motegi, Japan, there is the World Cup.
Well, yeah, the World Cup is a very big race meeting on the international scene. We've got a couple of Australians over there. Barclay Holden, I think from memory, qualified 4th from what I was seeing on the internet before. And he struck some troubles, but I believe he's confident of getting back in the pre-final as we speak. Jason Heinuke is also over there doing well for Australia. So it's good to see Andrew Tomlinson has also made the field in his class. So obviously there's the World Cup, Puerto Rico and Oceania are the big card events, if you like, in our next issue. But we also have a lot of the club level racing from around the country and other feature stories, technical articles, interviews and so on as well.
And one thing, the voting has closed and a bit of a change in the Cardos Top 50 this year. You're actually going for a popularity contest almost, as it were, rather than the hard-nosed decisions that get you in a lot of trouble editorially.
Yeah, well, the top 50 each year, it causes the phone to ring. this year we've opened it up to the general karting public, if you like, to nominate and put forward some opinions on the top 50, and we'll still be doing our voting within the industry. We send out voting polls to a lot of the major players, both in the industry, the sport, politically and so on, to get votes that way. But we've also allowed the readers to have a bit of an input. That has now closed for the readers to have input, and we're in the sort of the final stages of doing the rest of the vote. And I'm not telling you anything about who's doing well and who's not.
Uh-huh. Is that a December edition or is that the January edition?
No, that will be in January.
Okay, so we've got 2 months to look forward to before that one. But of course, you can keep up to date with Karting Around the World at the Kart Oz. com.au.
That's the one.
And obviously you can get a taste of what's coming up in this month's Card Oz magazine.
Yep.
Mark Wicks, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I look forward to having a chat to you right throughout, well, the summer, when things probably are starting to quieten down a little bit.
Yeah, it's carding tends to taper off during December and January over the Christmas holiday period, but I mean, it's an all-year-round sport, but I'm sure that things will fire up pretty early next year.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a great year, 2001, with the plans already on the table for the two series again. It's going to be an interesting one, and I look forward to having a chat to you soon.
Not a problem.
And we don't get a lot of opportunity to talk about drag racing, but this week we do have a piece on it, and we've got an interview with Brett Stevens, who won 2 weeks ago, and we promised this.
Well, man, we haven't been able to see in Canberra all that often recently with the drag racing problems that are going on in the ACT in New South Wales, but has certainly been turning on a treat, not only with the Jack Daniels top Harley bike rider, now a Andra champion in Top Door Slammer as well. Brett Stevens, congratulations. What a fantastic weekend that you enjoyed last weekend at Calder.
Yeah, thank you. It was a good weekend for myself and my crew. We achieved a lot, something that hadn't been done in Australia for about 25 years, I think.
It is interesting to see Jack Daniels' support with you from the bike now transferring over to the Top Door Slammer. That has really allowed you some consistency in the event.
Yeah, it was, you know, like we got to a point with the bike where we couldn't sort of go ahead much more. We'd achieved a lot of things, and I've been racing the Top Fuel Harley now for like 10 years, so I had a little bit of pressure to go to a car, and the question has always been asked by my fans if we were ever going to race a car, and the opportunity came up, so we jumped at it, and we seem to be doing okay at it so far.
It is a different mindset, I would imagine, sitting down and having to react like you do as compared to when you're basically lying on the Harley.
Yeah, it is. The biggest problem I have is the RPM of the engines, you know, like the car leaves the line at more RPM than what the bike does crossing the finish line, so I've got to set my mind to think about that so I don't short shift the gears in it, and it's a whole different power curve and a whole different thing, you know, being on four wheels as opposed to two.
How do you go from engineering a bike to engineering a car? Is there a big difference there?
No, it's basically the same way of thinking. You know, it's just sort of like if you put your mind to it, you can do it. It's a mechanical thing, and it's made by humans to be worked on and driven by humans. So that's the way I think of it anyway. And I'm a mechanic by trade, and I just work my way through it and try to work so I understand what I'm doing rather than just do what someone says to do.
Now, obviously, being involved in drag racing for so long, your fans would probably be jumping up and down to see you go out in two events. How demanding is it physically on you to, one, have two cars, or to have two events that you're preparing yourself for physically?
Yeah, it is pretty demanding physically, and, you know, like, tires you physically because your mind's working so hard, but the hardest thing like is getting things synchronized and organized, so you know, like getting changed from one driving suit into the leathers and then vice versa, and the tracks work with me most of the time and allow, you know, try and give me as much time as I can, and I always have someone waiting at the end, so sort of I jump off the bike and get dressed in the vehicle on the back of a bike going back to the start line to get in cards, and it's worked pretty good, and we've achieved a lot in the last two meetings, you know, but times we've had both in the finals, and won the first time, won both the next time, so it's a big hats off to my crew, you know, they work really hard.
And you're going to have to run in three different divisions next time just to better it.
That question's been asked a couple of times, and no, sorry, I might be a little bit silly, but I'm not that silly.
Well, Brett, second round of the championship is, what, mid-December?
Yeah, in Adelaide.
And just going by, when you're riding the bike, now, we hear about bikes and cars needing different things, but is there a big difference that you look at the track now and go, this track's going to be great for the bike, but, gee, my car's going to take a lot of work to get quick?
No, like, because the bike runs in the, like, the groove that the car runs in, you know, well, I usually run on the inside wheel track of the cars, you know, like the inside of the track. And the Harley, if anything, the Harley will break traction before the car will, because it makes so much torque. And so I actually try and, I've got to actually take power away from it on the start line to get it to get off the start line, which we're working on. We've got a new bike under construction, and hopefully that it'll be ready for the next round. And if that's ready, the rest of the guys better watch out, because I've got some big predictions for it. And if they come true, we're going to be running real fast on the bike.
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun still.
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it, and when I stop enjoying it, well, that's when I'm probably going to stop.
Well, we certainly hope, Brett, we can see you back up here in Canberra very soon with our dramas at the track there. But for the Jack Daniels Racing team, I'm sure they're happy with the new records you've been setting, and considering Victor Bray set a world record, you must have been pretty nervous going into that final.
Oh, you know, like, and at the winners, when we had the car, went through and we won, we got a fairly sort of easy way through, I suppose you'd call it, if there is an easy way in drag racing. But we definitely, anyone that wanted to, like, knock us, we definitely put them wrong, put their mind at ease, like, because we went the hard way about it down in Melbourne, where we had Gary Phillips first round, Victor Bray second round, Andrew Searle third round. It was just the hard way. We ran our personal best there, both in ET and mile an hour, and it was just a good meet, and everything just went right.
Well, Brett, congratulations, and we look forward to catching up with you very soon.
Okay, thank you.
Well, there we have some drag racing. And still, you know,
show a little bit of interest, please.
Well, no, I think it's just it's a pity the fact that we don't have any drag racing locally, which is, you know, the biggest problem of all time. The fact that, you know, as we've heard from other people, the fact the government can tip buckets of money into a V8 race, quibbles about a few thousand dollars for an international class rally,
20 cents.
And yet here's a place that's running itself and making its own money, etc., for no cost at all, and they can't assist it. Makes you wonder where their priorities lie, doesn't it?
Well, not in the common sense bag, but it is time to wrap it up. The King is waiting patiently in the wings, so we do have an ad break to clear, and then it will be off to him. But Peter, your final thoughts on Bathurst 2000?
Yeah, disappointing result. We know that from a very loyal Ford fan.
I've heard that for like 7 days.
But what a fantastic race. Despite the rain and the miserable conditions, it put on fantastic drama, lots of excitement. Yeah, it's great.
And Colin, in the week ahead, what are you going to be focusing in on?
Well, I want to see who wins the World Rally Championship finally, if, you know, Burns can pull it out of the bag and Gronholm drops it at the last or whatever. But I'd say all very likely it'll be Gronholm. The next interesting thing will be there's all the usual silly season going on. The final few chairs to be sorted out in Formula One, and of course the various seats available in V8 supercars, and the build-up to the first super touring race down in Tasmania, which I think is on the 10th of December or thereabouts, so down at Simmons Plain. So that's going to be something to look forward to there.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sats, with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.